The opening words are a poem by Marie Howe, My Dead Friends. My dead friends, I have begun when I'm weary and can't decide an answer to a bewildering question, to ask dead friends for their opinion, and the answer is often immediate and clear. Should I take the job? Move to the city? Should I try to conceive a child in my middle age? They stand in unison, shaking their heads and smiling. Whatever leads you to joy, that they always answer to more life and less worry. I look into the vase where Billy's ashes were. It's green in there, a green vase. And I ask Billy if I should return the difficult phone call, and he says, yes. Whatever he says, I'll do. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. I am Michael Nelson, the minister here at this wonderful fellowship. And I would ask all of you to just take a moment to be present. To breathe deeply, take that deep breath, just do it. I know it may feel odd, but it's good to breathe deep. Settle the shoulders if they're up here, bring them down. And the jaw usually is a place of great tension, let it loose. And if you're reading, let the reading go. And release any nagging thoughts that you have, any spinning, any worries, any. Bring it all there. Choose to be present to the vital peace of this sanctuary that supports the very best in you and encourages you to follow a path that brings more joy, more life, and less worry. Rest in the progressive values that inspires us in each moment to love one another, to care for others who suffer, and to take good care of ourselves from the beginning and to the end of our days. We light our chalice, fragment of stars and sun, to light our hopes and dreams, to make way for peace and love. We light the chalice in fellowship, in love, laughter, and praise, drawing from inspiration and hope, strength for days to come. I call your attention to the announcements in our order of service. In addition to those, I have two buried here under my notes, or at three, I think. Let's see. No, one. All right. Following our highly successful fellowship dinner a week ago Friday, the next dinner will be Friday, October 12th. If you would like to join fellow UUs or friends for an evening of great food and convivial conversation, there's a sign-up sheet in the narthex. We're also looking for someone who would like to host. So if you'd like to do that, put that on top of the list. And I would also like to invite anybody who's interested in the adult religious education class to join us in looking at what it might mean to be comfortable with uncertainty, a book by Pema Chodron. And it really is a great way to look into all those things that make us feel ill at ease. So now let us stand as you are able and sing The Morning Hangs, a signal number 40.
The signal on the mountain crest, while all the sleeping valleys in silent darkness rest. Peak to peak it flashes, it laughs along the sky, till glory of above the generations, a lonely prophet's rise of truth flares as the day star within their glowing eyes, and other eyes beholding are kindled from the flame, and dawn becomes morning when prophets love proclaim. The soul has lifted moments above the drift of days, when life's great meaning breaketh in sunrise on our ways. Behold the radiant of faith above all fear, allowing me to surrender, I shall appear.
Thank you. This is the time in our order of service when we share those personal joys and concerns that bring radiance and depth to our lives. I'd like to share that Betty Banner, a very stalwart member of our congregation, is in the hospital at KU Med Center. She had a heart procedure done that ended up nicking something and needs more attention. But everything is coming along very well, so we're pleased about that. And Eric Banner, whom many of you know, sends his fall greetings, even though it's not quite fall yet. So, other joys and other concerns. Kathy.
Hold it straight.
I'm Kathy Swinson, and I want to introduce my parents, Marie and Winston Peterson, who now reside in Manhattan.
Welcome.
Bobette McGoy, I just wanted to say that we got moved this last week, which is a great joy. Our concern now is that we have another home for sale. And so if you know anyone who wants a beautiful home, please direct them our way.
I think that was an advertisement. All right, for our... Is there one more? All right. We all know that we carry great things in our heart and things that disturb us, so let's be mindful and be gentle with one another. Now let us have the choir and the anthem.
Piece of music over a year ago, and I've been looking for an opportunity to use it. So when Michael told me what this morning's theme was, this is more about living a good life and living well, but that certainly is prelude to dying well. Two couplets I want to mention. If I could choose, I would chase the wind past imagined corners of places I've never been, above the clouds where my heart has flown, far beyond the comfort of places I've always known. If this doesn't fit our speakers, I don't know what does.
right, it's time for our children's conversation, and Mike is going to lead it. Would the children please come and join him?
Okay, how's everybody doing today? Good? Kind of a rainy, cooler day out there. Michael Nelson asked me to speak with you all this morning, and I'm sure some of you older kids at least have read a little bit about our topic for the grown-ups today, and we're dealing with some pretty big stuff. The name of the topic that Michael is doing today is determining your own path. And we're also doing preparing for the last stage of life. And he asked me to speak to the kids. I thought, well, gosh, this is a pretty heavy topic to talk to kids about. But if you look at the name of the topic, determining your own path, it made me think back to when I was younger and think about choices, choices that we all make even as kids, and how those choices, even at your age, can really be life-changing and form, you make choices that you can go one direction or the other. So I thought I'd maybe talk to you guys about making choices and how those choices can affect you, because when you get older and your hair turns gray like mine, you'll remember back and you'll think, wow. But making the right choices can help you live a meaningful, full life. And making bad choices can too. It just depends on how we handle those bad choices. Because I'll tell you what, no one in here, grown up or kid, has ever made every perfect choice. It's what we do with those choices when we make mistakes and how we learn from them that can help you lead that meaningful life. So I wanted to ask, especially now that school's kind of just started, this is kind of my direction of thinking, having a child who just started school. How many of you in school have had a situation already this year where you encountered some other people who were maybe making a bad choice, and you had to decide if you wanted to go along with the bad choice or do something different? Have any of you guys had to do that already this school year? You have, Kaya? Yeah? No one else? Or are we just being a little shy? Rose, you have? Do you want to tell us what happened? Do you want to come talk in the microphone and tell us what happened?
One of my friends in my class, her name is Skylar, and she is mean, and I don't do the choices that she does.
Well, it's good that you recognize that and you make different choices. Now, you know, yeah, what did you need to say?
When I grow up and I be 5, I want to have a yo-yo for my birthday and a trumpet.
Those would be good choices. Okay, we're going to skip ahead a little bit. Now, I can tell you that I have been in situations just like the one Rose described and similar to many of the ones that we're having unspoken today, and I've made wrong choices before. I think everyone here has. And how do you think it makes you feel later if you make the wrong choice? Like, say something happens at school and you know you did kind of the wrong thing and you're at home later just kind of thinking about it. Does anybody have any thoughts on how that might make you feel later that day? In the back there, you want to come up and talk? Or you just want to say it and I'll restate it for you? Do you want to come up and just tell me? Sad. Yeah, it can make you feel sad, kind of embarrassed. Uh-huh. Do you want to speak? Or?
It makes you feel guilty and it makes you feel like you're that you did something that made someone upset and doesn't really feel good.
That's right on the money. So we all know that when you do these things, you feel sad. And the fact that you feel sad or you feel remorse or guilty, those are good feelings. And it tells you that you are thinking about it the right way and you're making good choices to lead that meaningful life. And you're learning. That's the most important thing when you make those choices, is to learn from making the wrong choice. So now, how many of you have had an experience this year at school where you feel like you made the right choice? I bet all of you have done that. Yeah? Where you maybe saw some people doing things they shouldn't, and you said, you know, I'm not going to do that. Yeah? All right. So how does that make you feel later? Anyone want to come up and talk and tell everybody?
It makes you feel good.
Yeah. Makes you feel good, maybe proud, happy. Yeah, Rose?
Makes you feel proud and good.
Yeah. All right. So these are the decisions that, you know, we have to face, and like I say, if we learn from these decisions, we'll lead a long, meaningful life. And then when you get older, you can look back and know that you did the best you could. Feel good about your life when you reflect back. Feel good about the friends you made during this time of life. I have friends that go back to kindergarten and maybe even a little bit before that I still keep in regular contact with. And, you know, we didn't always make the right choices, but we learned from our mistakes, and we still have meaningful friendships that, you know, we'll happily look back and reflect on later as adults. So I want to thank you all for taking the time to talk to me today. And I hope this was a good reminder of how to live a good, meaningful life by just kind of making the right choices. And when you slip up, like we all do, understanding that you learned from it. So, all right.
Sorry, I didn't tell Mike this. I apologize. So Molly McGoy, one of the RE teachers, and we're going to start a slightly different go out. Everybody's still going to sing the same song to us, but we're going to have one kid each week light a candle for the RE classrooms off of the chalice. So this week, Ronan, if you would be my helper, hang back with me, and we'll let everybody else sing us out, and then other kids will get a turn from week to week, okay?
All right.
Now in peace, go now in peace. May the spirit of love surround you everywhere, everywhere you may go.
Today, it's our privilege to welcome new members to the fellowship, and would those that are here for that recognition, Usha, Matt and Jen, Rita and Taylor are unfortunately out of town, and Marissa Larson, please come forward. Today we welcome into our community these new members who have chosen to make a commitment to this congregation by signing our membership book. New members, we are glad to have you here with us and that you have chosen this community of fellow seekers to grow in your capacity to live an evolving truth that reveals the complexity and beauty of what it means to be human. Will you accept our gifts of fellowship, discovery, and service? Will you offer us your unique presence and gifts? Will you add your name to the long list of Unitarian Universalist women and men who spread hope with living faith? Will you engage with us as we seek to create a community and a world dedicated to love and justice? If so, say we will. All right, that's great. Congregation, will you welcome these new members with the warmth and the comfort of your fellowship? Will you seek to add your strength and talents to the new gifts that they bring us? Will you share our triumph? Will you share our triumphs and our struggles as our community grows and changes? In the midst of our beautiful diversity of belief, we seek to dwell together in peace, to seek truth in love, and to help one another. We celebrate this great purpose by welcoming each of you into the life of our beloved community. Thank you, and welcome again and again and again. The offering is a sacrament of our free fellowship. It is supported by the voluntary generosity of all who join us. The offering will now be given and received in grateful appreciation of our shared hopes and values. Setting your own path. We need to speak with one another about our experiences with death, about loved ones that have died, and the hopes and fears that we carry about our own death and for all those we love. We need to come out of the conversational closet and share more openly what we want and don't want. We need to support one another in this effort so that we can articulate our wishes with clarity and courage as members of a caring community. Living and dying with dignity is about making choices that aligns us with our personal values and supporting others in living out their choices. This is as much, if not more, about living than it is about dying. What you do today impacts tomorrow and ultimately improves if done with full heart, open mind, and a willingness to explore the quality of your life. And it can make a major difference in how you die. What choices do you make in everyday life that lead to more joy, less worry, and a more vital life? I can remember when I was 20 years old and had read Don Juan Castaneda, and in that book there was this passage about Don Juan learning from his teacher that death was always over your left shoulder, about 20 paces behind you. It was always there. It was always following you. You couldn't escape it, so you might as well do your best to make friends with that shadow that was following you. How do you do that? In one way, it has been said, live life as if you were going to die today. Because as we know, there are people who just drop dead. And I don't mean that as a way of manipulating or exploiting the drama of that, but to look clearly at its reality. To take a clear look at that possibility asks you to reflect on what helps you to be the best person you can be for yourself, for your family, for your community, and for the world that you live in. It's not a simple, like, oh, let's just have fun kind of answer. It's more complicated than that, and yet it is as simple as that. In the end, if you're not having fun with what you're doing in your life, that may be a telltale sign that something is not right. So, some of the questions you might ask yourself: do you respect your own inherent worth and dignity? Do you value your own life, the quality of your everyday living? Do you do things that enrich yourself every single day? When you wake up, do you take a moment to be thankful for the life that you've been given? In the midday, do you pause and say, oh, I'm thinking about so-and-so. I think I'll give her a call and see how she's doing. And at dinner time, are you thankful for all the blessings of food and shelter and family that you may have? These small things, which may seem inconsequential, help create the structure from which we can live a more meaningful life, a life that has more joy, less worry. Death is a fact that focuses our answers, our questions and answers. Is your heart open? Are you closed off to new people? Are you afraid of telling someone that you love dearly that you love them? Is it easy for you to do that? If it's not easy, there is probably some room to open up, to relax, to live more generously. And if it's too easy, well, we won't go there. Do you hold grudges, resentments, regrets? Are there people in third grade that you still feel angry about? And here you are at 59. Still holding on to that little grudge that can bring the flame to your face and ears and make your heart race with anger. If that's the case, maybe that should soften. There's lots of places in our life where we hold on to things in ways that keep us from being available to the love and the joy and the amplitude of living with purpose. If it's tight, open up. You can practice forgiveness. It's one of the hardest things to do because we can always find a rationale for not forgiving. Always. That's the easiest thing to do. The hardest thing to do is to say, I forgive you. I do not hold a grudge against you. Let's move on. And maybe you have to say that the rest of your life. But that is a good practice.
We have to have a stool for the short people. Sorry.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Well, as Michael was saying, we've all had a few experiences with death that shaped our feelings about death. When I was 23, my father died very suddenly, and my two older brothers said, as you are pregnant, you should have nothing to do with all of this. And there was only a family memorial in the vast and empty Christian Science Mother Church in Boston. When I was 43, my mother died where she wished, at our home, with our children and grandchildren visiting, but not how she wished. She had asked Dick for pills so that she could die as an effective person, which was her Christian Science belief, and with dignity. This was unthinkable for us in 1969, before hospice, before assisted suicide. So, fast forward. For 20 years, I considered myself, like most of you, invulnerable. And then in my 60s, I had 3 surgeries and an emergency appendectomy, and that jolted me into a class on aging. We were told to update living wills and documents and start filling out things right there in class. And we were given a document called 5 Wishes, and I can talk to any of you about that if you want. It makes you decide about what you want for all of your dying days, and how you want your funeral, and how you want things to be organized for your families. So I filled out some of that 5 wishes, which, by the way, does not work in Kansas. That's not a surprise, is it? But they have a special document, and I have some if you want them, that are somewhat similar to 5 wishes. However, the 5 wishes makes you think a great deal more and deeply about what you want and what you want your families to know. So I wrote a bit, and then I sent the forms on to my children, because our teacher at the class had said, be sure that people in their 40s and 50s, because as Michael reminded us, you don't know when you're going to go. So our children also got these 5 wishes, and we also talked to them about what our wishes were. Then I have to say I didn't fill it all out. I sort of mostly forgot about it, as we tend to do. And then 10 years later, my best friend, with whom I talk daily, decided to handle her own death in a unique way. First, she threw a really extravagant wake, a party for everyone, while she was still able to get around and enjoy. And then a week later, she pulled the plugs on her planned death, her assisted suicide, with her family around her. And then celebrated her life with an American Indian pipe circle in our snowy January woods with all the family and all the dogs. Okay, fast forward to be when I was 80. I'm older now. Recognizing that we are in a new phase of life, we finally moved after 7 years working through our feelings and our children's feelings to be near our son and into the Meadowlark retirement community. And we also discussed, because K-State law is very different from Colorado law on things like living wills, we discussed our wishes with an elder law lawyer, Gabriella, and that again made me reconsider my feelings and wishes about my death. Now I have my 5 wishes form almost complete, but now it's time for me to discuss it again with our children, as we have changed and their lives have also dramatically changed. I hope to listen and to understand and accept their feelings. I believe that everyone has the right to a death with dignity and a good death, on their terms, what they consider a good death. And I have all the forms if anyone wants one.
Okay, it's my turn to die up here, maybe. I'm Charlie Kempthorne. I really want to say first how grateful I am to Michael for convening the group. I don't know if you even mentioned that we had a group that met 6 or 8 weeks of 6 of us, very small group, and We all got to have our say, and we bonded well with one another, I think, and I really like that way of dealing with the topic, especially something as important as what I privately call death prep. And I would tell June, my wife, that I was off to another meeting of death prep. And when Michael emailed me and asked me to say a couple of words about my experience with that group, I told him about death prep, and he said, that sounds like a Ionesco play. And so maybe it is, in a way. That's not a bad metaphor at all. But, you know, well, like most people growing up and even well into adult life, I was with Woody Allen on not being afraid of death. I just didn't want to be there when it happened. And, of course, modern medicine has made it perfectly possible for that to be like that. But I don't, the closer I get to it, I hope I'm not too close, but, you know, if I am, I am, the more I do want to be there, and I want to be very aware of what I'm doing. Not having lived life particularly well, I would like to die well. And do at least one thing right, you know, before I go. And so that's why I joined the group, and I really appreciated everybody's input and enjoyed that very much. Another kind of death I thought about, well, I grew up in the 50s. I came to manhood in the 50s, and in those days when you died in a movie, Gregory Peck or Rock Hudson or somebody like that, they had all this phony gray hair for them. They were really 35 years old, and you knew damn well they were a long, long way from dying. But there they were on their spread out on the great bed, the patriarch, and all the kids were conveniently gathered around, the children and the grandchildren, and the music came up at the proper moment, and Gregory or Rock or whomever, you know, shuffled off his mortal coil, and the words came up on the screen, the end, and the music, and that's the kind of death that I wanted. But it doesn't happen that way either. I come from a long line of rational suicides, I would call them that. My grandfather shot himself, he made no big thing of it, just took his rifle and put it to his forehead and did himself in. But he was 80 years old. He was hopelessly ill. He had had a long and, by his standards, very happy life, and so it was time to go. And so he did. And my father did pretty much the same thing. He hung himself instead of shooting himself, but you have to do it some way, and that's what he chose. And he was 80 also and hopelessly ill. He was an MD, and he wanted to avoid, I'm quite sure, the long, lingering, hospital-style death that costs thousands of dollars now and that is a chore for everybody in the entire family. So he hung himself. My mother starved herself to death. She was 88, again, and had a long and happy life by her own standards, and she just didn't. Well, she actually would have loved to live forever, and she did say one thing that was a little disconcerting to us. She said when she died, she wanted the world to end because she didn't want to miss anything. And I, being the son of my mother, I said, Mom, what about us, you know? But that's what Mom did. She was 88. I don't know whether I said that or not. So rational suicide comes logically to me. I don't want to, above all, at 70, pushing 75, whenever I go, I don't want to leave a mess. That's what I tell my wife and my family. However, my financial affairs can be pretty easily resolved by simply returning the unpaid bills marked deceased or something like that. But my literary affairs, unfortunately, are somewhat different. I'm a word man and have kept a journal for 50 years, and it's intimate and libelous and personal and contemptible in some ways, but it's been the tool I've used to get me to where I am today, wherever that is. It's about 8 million words long. 8 million words. Now, the average book is about 60 or 70,000 words long. So it's all typed up. It fills a double closet, single spaced, and so on. I have it in print, and I have it in my computer. And I am working my way through it, taking out stuff I want to delete. Ideally, I suppose my funeral will be right here, and I would reach my little hand out at the, they would have my laptop there by the coffin, and I would press delete on certain parts of my journal, and then that would be it. But I've got to go through that journal, and I'm working my way through it, but it's taking me longer to do the harvesting of it, as I call it, and the censoring than it did to write it. So I've got to find another method there, but seriously, I don't want to leave a mess, and I think that's a big thing, and I'm really grateful to Judy especially, and Dick did so much research on bringing Kansas around to letting people die. We're so big on letting them live as they want, but we don't let them die as they want. But I really am grateful for the group, and thank you for listening.
There is a place you can go where you are quiet, a place of water and the light on the water. Trees are there, leaves and the light on leaves moved by air. Birds singing move among leaves in leaf shadow. After many years, you have come to know thought of these, but they are themselves your thoughts. There seems to be little to say, less and less. Here they are. Here you are. Here as though gone. None of us stays, but in the hush where each leaf in the speech of leaves is a sufficient syllable, the passing light finds out, surpassing freedom of its way. Would you like to die with dignity and peace, where you are free to set out your own path, where you have done so? It is our responsibility as Unitarian Universalists to make choices that have a positive result for ourselves and hopefully for all involved. While we do not choose the circumstances we were born in, we can make choices about how we want to die. You can determine the location and focus of your care, the home, your home, or you can move to a facility. You can choose palliative care to relieve pain and suffering. You can request referral to hospice care when your illness is terminal and no longer wish to seek treatment to cure the disease. You can refuse or discontinue treatment. This includes feeding tubes, medications, transfusions, respirators, surgery, chemotherapy, radiation, and dialysis. If you want to die naturally, you can refuse food and water. As Unitarian Universalists, it is important that we uphold, as we uphold a woman's right to choose what she does with her own body, we need to support each other in our right to choose how we want to approach and die, our death and die. It is as important. Hospitals are often not a good place to die. There's too much noise, there's too much confusion, there's not attention. Enough attention given to serenity and peace, and a place where people are comfortable surrounding their loved one, if that's the case, with love. and a willingness to say goodbye. Care with dignity of the person should be at the center and the mind and the heart. We should help each other choose ways to do this that have dignity and love and care.
Well, first, I usually have to deal with the stage fright before I get to paying attention to death. Make friends with death. I found that very difficult to do. I've always had a will, you know, had insurance to provide for family if I died, and of course, I didn't have much feeling that I was going to die. It was so far off. But the things I did that reflected death were just those responsible things one does. I've avoided the concrete acts of planning my funeral. I find that very difficult. Deciding where I want to be buried, gifting prized possessions to people. And, but finally, after our workshop, I was able to decide where I wanted to be buried. That's at least one step that I've taken. But sharing thoughts with the other members really began to help me confront my denial. It also brought up many memories of meaningful deaths in my past. But I always quickly, that leaves my mind, have a very good process of denial. So when we got Michael's letter talking about today was coming, and then Judy was, as her usual fine way, preparing well ahead, I managed to keep procrastinating about this. And I guess procrastination is a very powerful support for denial. So I finally sat down to put some thoughts together. It's, of course, very personal to my process of trying to come to grips with this. So I finally decided, I'll take my own advice, make friends with death, and thought about the fact that I'm a psychotherapist. I believe in the talking cure. And it seemed to me that I needed to integrate all those past experiences. The experience Judy mentioned of her mother living and then dying in our home was one of the most meaningful experiences that in my life. But there, of course, have been many others, given that I spent a good deal of time in my life in the hospital. As a physician, but I realized I needed to integrate those past experiences with the current experiences now. Our daughter is dealing with great grace and courage and competence with her acute leukemia, and you know, really getting into the details of it because she's a scientist, and our experience as residents and ombudsman at Meadowlark, which is a place that the transition from life to death is present all the time. Someone is always dying or losing function. They have to go to a different unit, and I don't think I fully understood, I think Judy did, that we would be confronting that by moving to Metal Ark, but it also provided the security and the fact that I felt that realistically it could deal with whatever emergency came up, and it's already proven itself to us. And it's a very vital community. And then you add the fellowship here, and that's very, very fine. So I think that what we need to do is to also focus on our own transition, and we certainly see the changes day by day, month by month at least, and talk about it with friends who are open to that, not, you know, not confront people that are not, that's not comfortable, but talk with friends and family. And so I'm just beginning, even after the 6 weeks of our workshop, to follow my own advice and make friends with death.
I'm Beth Skinner, and I've been interested in end-of-life issues for a very long time. I not only believe in planning for a good death, but under certain circumstances, I would follow the same path that Charlie has outlined, rational suicide, though perhaps by gentler means than he mentioned. My personal concern is Alzheimer's, which has afflicted too many members of my family. And if that should happen to me also, I would like to arrange not to spend the final years of my life on an Alzheimer's unit somewhere. So that's my background, but my topic this is sharing with the people that you love. And this is something that applies to all of us, no matter what your thinking is about how you might want to arrange your death. My family was already somewhat aware of my views, but this workshop provided a very good opening for renewing the conversation. And the most revealing conversation that I had was with my sister. She and her husband were at my house for a visit, and in a quiet moment, I brought up this recent workshop and then my thoughts about suicide under certain circumstances. And she replied, "If you did that, I would feel abandoned." I was truly taken aback, abandoned. At a childish level, I wanted to say to her, "Sis, one of us has to go first and I'm older." And then I wanted to say, "Sis, as a pathologist, you know a lot about death and dying. Surely you would agree that in certain circumstances, it's better to check out a few years early than waiting too long." I didn't say those things. I hope that I was respectful of her feelings. I don't remember exactly how this first conversation ended. It kind of petered out, and we dropped it. They went home to Denver, and then in our next telephone chat, she brought up this issue of her own accord and said, "It occurs to me that my reaction last week was somewhat selfish." And we went on from there to have a more open and comfortable conversation than we had ever had before. She asked me questions about my thinking. Her practical pathologist side kicked in for a bit. And finally she said, "Well, don't go just like that. Say goodbye first." We're not finished with this topic. It's still a sensitive issue, but we are closer. We know each other better. We understand more than we did before. It's not easy talking about dying, especially in our culture. You might come upon a surprising answer. You may not convince your relatives of your viewpoint, but the outcome can be good, like this one. So if any of you are involved in such conversations or you're thinking about having one, may I wish that you have good outcomes too.
I'm going to skip the poem and share a quick story. There is a gentleman by the name of Alan Hansen from Lincoln, Nebraska, who discovered that he had Parkinson's disease. And him and his wife had been married for 59 years, Lois and Alan, and they had always lived their life as an adventurer, willing to look at everything that came across their path with openness. So they never shied away from difficult subjects or never stopped having fun when fun was available. But they decided that, you know, they really wanted to be clear with themselves about what they wanted and what they wanted their children to know. So they invited their children to a dinner and said that at some point, when the Parkinson's makes it so difficult for me to continue living with any integrity, when I have no energy to respond, but I'm just lying there, I will take control of the end of my life. And then he went on to say, I'm not asking for your permission. I'm telling you, this is my plan. So on a sunny February winter morning, after a meal with his family the night before of his favorite food, a pork pot roast and roasted potatoes, the next morning in the company of his daughter and son and his wife, he took the medication that would end his life. Within 5 minutes, he became unconscious. He had a strong heart, and it beat for 29 more hours. And as the family gathered, they held his hand, stroked his head, and remembered that the last thing that is said to go is your hearing. So they kept on affirming how much they loved him, how much they respected his choice, how much they would miss him. It's not all about it being love. There's also grief and loss. And this is what Lois had to say. It was a sacred time, full of love and loss, a good death, following a good life of 81 years. The grandchildren were there. The children were there. His wife was there. And they all sensed a great peace and also a great loss. You can't divorce the two. It's there. But it's the love that holds us up and brings us forward and takes us to our next adventure, whatever that may be. Let us now stand as you are able and sing the closing hymn, All Beautiful, the March of Days, number 57. Our wife. Let me share these closing words by Henry David Thoreau. Every blade in the field, every leaf in the forest lays down its life in its season, as beautifully as it was taken up. Let us take up the rest of this day with beauty.